How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Isaiah along the baseline kicks it back to Bradley. There's the late shot. Avery.
Yeah! Avery Bradley won the game!
And two guys warned him and he kicked it out. And I was able to knock down the shot because initially we were going for the two-pointer, but the three was there and I'm happy. It's a big one for us. I'm happy for us tonight.
Make his own to his right. They let him have that left side. Thomas has the basketball, gives it up. Swarming for Bradley. Oh, my gosh.
That's a ball game.
You've got to be kidding me. Avery Bradley just stole the game and the Cavaliers lose 104-103. My goodness.
Oh my goodness. That was the Cavs broadcast at the end there. Devastated by the Avery Bradley three-pointer. You heard Avery Bradley talking about the play. You heard Mike Gorman loving the play.
That Cavaliers call is hilarious. Like that guy is devastated. Oh my God. Avery Bradley is stolen the game.
We loved the play. This is the Rain and Jays podcast. I'm John Corrales. That's Jay King. What a win for the Boston Celtics to continue an amazing run.
Yeah, they've now won 8 of their last 9 games. If it weren't for an Evan Fournier outburst in Orlando, they should be on a 9-game winning streak. They've seemed to have figured it out. Their offense is better. Their defense is still a force, and they beat the Cavs on the road by coming back from a 4-point deficit with 8.5 seconds left. Just out 5 points in the final 4.9 seconds?
Yeah.
Just outrageous. Outrageous finish.
So the Celtics, look, I went into this game expecting a loss. Like, it was the Cavs. You're supposed to lose to the Cavs. But you're also supposed to beat the Brooklyn Nets, so things kind of have a way of evening out. But the game started off horribly, and I was just sitting there thinking, well, this is just going to be a bloodbath. Because, look, the Cavaliers are the best team in the East, and the Celtics are, like we talked about last week, in that bunch below. So, of course, when the Cavs stormed out to their big lead, you sit there and you think, all right, we're just going to sit back. We're going to take it. This is going to be one of those games. You learn from it and you move on. But then they just kept hanging around. And then they went on a run to start the third quarter. And the Cavs just didn't look great down the stretch. And they made some bonehead plays. So Kyrie Irving puts them up 4 with 8 seconds left, 7.5 seconds left. Evan Turner gets the ball in the corner. This is what gets me from the Cavaliers' perspective. How dumb are you, J.R. Smith, to run at Evan Turner like that, basically inviting him to drive by you? Ran at him like he was Steph Curry going to bang a three to take the lead. That's the one guy on the floor you want taking a three. And he did take a three earlier. I wanted to reach through my TV and strangle him. But that's an aside. Evan Turner had a great game otherwise. So Evan Turner gets the layup. Fine. It's now a 2-point game. Evan Turner was trying to make that free throw. He wasn't missing on purpose. He missed anyway. It was the best thing that could happen. Marcus Smart bulls his way past Timofey Mozgov, ball off of LeBron, and then the game winner. The Cavaliers couldn't have played that worst. LeBron was stuck to Evan Turner on that last play. Again, why defending Evan Turner? Why is LeBron and Evan Turner? That's the guy you want your worst defender on.
Stevens actually thought that was a brilliant play by LeBron.
How is that brilliant?
The Celtics were trying to throw a lob to Turner, and James saw that what they were doing and switched on to Turner to take that away.
So if you think they're going to throw a lob to Turner, put Mozgov on him. I just don't I just don't see it. I don't think, and who am I to argue with Brad Stevens, but that what you ended up with is Kyrie Irving trying to defend the one of two guys on the floor that could hit a three. Well, three guys on the floor because Crowder was inbounding the ball. But Avery Bradley coming off of a pick is a very plausible scenario with the way they were set up. And you can have Kyrie Irving guarding that? That was.
I think it was supposed to be Shumpert. Shumpert kind of got caught ball watching. They had switched. And Irving was on actually Sullinger at the time. And Shumpert got caught ball watching. It was terrible defense, though. It was really bad. Especially when, I mean, yeah, if you give up a two, you go to overtime. If you give up a three, it's over. The Celtics are going home with a victory. And as you said, Avery Bradley's one of their top shooters. And Shumpert got caught watching Isaiah Thomas on the baseline. And Bradley drilled one from the corner. What a sequence. That was one of the craziest endings. It reminded me of the Miami game. Was it Stevens' first year when Jeff Green hit the three from the corner? I think that game they also came back from 4 points in the final – 3 or 4 seconds against LeBron. It's always LeBron.
Which Celtics fans love.
Yeah. He was great down the stretch, though, wasn't he? Oh, man, he got to the hoop time after time. There was nothing they could do with him down the stretch.
No.
And then the Cavs just botched it. Just completely handed that game away. And the Celtics took it to their credit.
No, of course.
They took it.
That was a duel. Both sides are implicit in this. In this win/loss, depending on your perspective, the Cavs did not close out that game well at all. I think they just relaxed and they made some stupid, stupid mistakes. And the Celtics, this falls under you make your own luck. You have to have some luck. Some things have to go your way, but you have to be able to work hard to take advantage of those situations. So when they played poor defense, then the Celtics took advantage of that. When J.R. Smith made that stupid play to run out of Evan Turner so hard, closing out really way too hard.
Another additional layer of stupidity there. Ty Lue said he'd actually instructed them that if the Celtics got into the paint, just let them have the layup. Do not contest. Do not risk any type of foul. And, of course, Smith A, lets him get by. B, tries to contest. And C, picks up the foul. Like the holy triumvirate of stupidity. So,
yeah.
And J.R. Smith had a great game. Otherwise, he was fantastic. He hit 5 threes. He hit that huge three in the fourth quarter. Like, he was really good most of the game. And just made a dumb, boneheaded J.R. Smith type of play.
Never discount J.R. Smith's stupidity. He's not one of those guys with a high IQ. He's a gunner, and he's not smart. And so, yeah, you gave up two. They gave up 5 points in 5 seconds, less than 5 seconds. That is just amazing to me. You can hear how despondent those Cavs announcers were.
Yeah, and Marcus Smart. How about Marcus Smart?
Yes.
Adding to his, like just weird, hustle-filled resume. He guards Kristaps Porzingis. He beats Timofey Mozgov for a key loose ball. That guy is just such a competitor. I mean, never count him out. It's just if a loose ball is out there, he has like – they normally call him 50-50 balls. With him, it's like 80-20.
That's true. I mean, look, we've talked about it time and time again. Marcus Smart's return and his return to health, not just his return.
Yeah.
Once he got healthy and is at 100%, completely changed this team. And that was an example of ways that the Celtics couldn't win before he got healthy. That was Marcus Smart doing what he could to disrupt a play, hustle, work hard, and then you don't know what happens. Swipe the ball away out of Mozgov's hand. Didn't even have to get the rebound. Off of LeBron, give yourself a chance to win. So that's the type of thing when Marcus Smart was hurt, the Celtics lose a game like that, they might not have even been in a position to be that close. So he is, and we'll talk about Isaiah Thomas. Obviously, he's an all-star. Jay Crowder's ascension. Kelly Olynyk, who had a horrible game last night, but in general has been pretty good during this stretch. And all of these things that are supremely important. And Marcus Smart, even when he wasn't shooting well, was important to the Celtics winning. But as his shooting well happened to coincide with the Celtics winning 8 of 9 games. So since that snow day, since he had that one day in the gym to work on his jump shot, he's been shooting lights out.
Yeah, it was funny because I was kind of like, oh, yeah, okay, Marcus. Like sure, I'm sure the snow day will do it, man. And sure enough, after that, he has really shot the ball well. Let's throw out those crazy last 7.5 seconds. That's still a promising performance. You know, Crowder had nothing on his ankle. His shot was horribly flat. Isaiah Thomas, again, inefficient against Cleveland. A lot of things went wrong against Boston. Like, they got jumped on right from the start, and they just kind of kept plugging away. And with a lot of things going wrong, they still gave themselves a chance to win on the road against the Eastern Conference's best team.
Yeah, and look, you got tremendous performances from guys that normally haven't given those types of performance. Tyler Zeller.
Let's talk
about Tyler Zeller. Because, and remember, weeks ago, we've been saying for a while that Tyler Zeller gets no minutes, blah, blah, blah. One of these days, he's going to go out there and get a few minutes. He's going to be awesome. And it finally has happened. He's finally, last night, 16 points, 4 rebounds, an assist, a plus 5. He was 8 of 10 shooting. He has had an amazing stretch. When did he see his first? He first came in against the Knicks. So the past few games, he had a great game against the Knicks. Stevens wanted to combat the size with Robin Lopez and Porzingis out there. And Tyler Zeller responded big against the Pistons. Not a great statistical game, but he did a lot. I think he had, 4 assists in that game?
I think 3 blocks, too. He blocked Drummond a couple times.
Yeah. So did other things, made a big impact. Last night, like the numbers I just rattled off, huge impact. Tyler Zeller, all of a sudden, after the entire season, sitting there waiting, benched basically after getting torched by Jahlil Okafor in the opening game, comes out and has been one of the Celtics' most important players over the last few games.
Yeah, and your boy Evan Turner, John, just keeps doing it in the fourth quarter.
I cannot deny this. I'm going to upgrade him. Last week I upgraded him to do not hate. And since then, he really pushed my buttons. He got ejected in that loss to Orlando, the one loss.
Although they were down 9 with a minute left, like people acted like that was like they had no shot. I know they made a run at it, but like when he got ejected, there was no chance they could win that game. At least it seemed like it.
It seemed like it, but see that, and I had a problem with that, not because of my usual Evan Turner, like, oh, that guy, I can't believe he's doing the stuff that he had been doing when I didn't like him. That was a loss of composure by a veteran at the wrong time. And I just thought that at that moment, that was a bad time to lose your composure, especially since they did make a run. So, but whatever, that happens. It happens to guys sometimes. He took a 3 in a key moment last night.
Yes, he did. That was, and it was early in the shot clock. To his credit, he was wide open, but there's a reason for it. He shoots very, very low percentage from beyond the arc.
Yes. So that was infuriating. I think he kind of got caught up in the moment that they were down 3 at that point, and he had been playing well. I think he was just feeling it, and he kind of lost sight of who he was. But that game last night overall was a really good game. 19 points off the bench, 8 of 16 shooting, 12 rebounds, 6 assists. I'm going to upgrade him from do not hate to kind of ambivalent. I'm now ambivalent. I have no opinion on Evan Turner, which is
no. Hold on, he is over his last 10 games.
That's how far back he was. I'm not going to say that I like him. I'm not going to say that I like his overall game. I am sitting there. I'm saying that he doesn't anger me when he comes in. I'm enjoying his performance, and I admit that he is doing really well. And that's it. Evan Turner is a very nice player for the Celtics, and this is big progress for me. This is a lot of progress.
This is Evan Turner has come a long way over his last 14 games, averaging 10.4 points, 4.9 assists, and 4.9 rebounds, while shooting 52.7% from the field. This is Evan Turner we're talking about, the formerly inefficient Evan Turner. He's playing the best defense of his life. He blocked LeBron at the rim last night, which was outrageous.
He did. Yes, he did. And I remember making the joke.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I want to have that on a loop, like a vine playing, and I'm going to stand there at LeBron's Hall of Fame induction ceremony and just stand there with that playing and just remind him that after everything that he's done, you still got blocked by Evan Turner.
Hey, Evan Turner, a good player now. A good player.
He's been really good. And the thing that is impressive about what he's doing is that I actually thought that with Marcus Smart back, there was going to be no real effectiveness in his game anymore because he's going to have to play off the ball. But to his and Brad Stevens' credit, he's being used in a way that still uses the skills that he has to a great advantage. He excels in areas on the floor where you wouldn't normally expect a guy to take these shots. He's not a today NBA player, quote unquote. He's not stretching the floor and all that stuff. He dribbles the ball way too much, but it works. It's working. He's playing well. And I am not just some Evan Turner hater. I'm not just going to sit there and just deny everything that he does. I don't like his game overall. And earlier in the season, in my defense, he was horrible. Let's just, when the Celtics were scuffling along there and trying to find their way, he was horrible. Now, at the same time, David Lee was playing.
So, I was just going to say, is David Lee that important to Evan Turner's play and to a lot of these guys' play?
That's a valid question.
Was he just dragging everyone down? The stats that I talked about before with Evan Turner with the last 14 games, that coincides with the post-David Lee era. Like, that has been since David Lee was officially benched. He's had DMPCDs in all of those games. Yeah. So was he dragging down Evan Turner that much? I don't think Turner will sustain quite such an efficient play. But he's been so much better since Lee was out of the rotation. The whole bench has been so much better. The bench has been almost every night just really, really helpful. And that's how this team was supposed to play. That's how they were built, with the depth. You know, they don't have the top guys, but they're 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Those guys can beat you. You know, when you have Tyler Zeller and Jonas Jerebko, Kelly Olynyk, Evan Turner, Marcus Smart, those guys can all have big games off the bench. Yeah. And now we're finally seeing that. And the bench rotation with Avery Bradley playing a lot with that second unit has really, really been good.
Yeah, and here's the thing. We thought coming into the season the bench was going to be a big strength for the Celtics, but that was when we thought Isaiah Thomas was going to be coming off of the bench. So making it even more impressive that the bench is doing that stuff with Isaiah Thomas as the starter. That's something that we didn't expect. So huge props to the bench. And Marcus Smart being, you don't want to say benched. He came back off of the injury, was used off of the bench, and just stayed there and is playing an effective role. And it just shows it doesn't matter when you're, you know, if you start or whatever, it's when in the game that you play. So these guys are largely effective. And even on a night where it's not the guy that's used. So Kelly Olynyk had a bad game last night, 12 points. He scored on two free throws, didn't hit a shot, just whatever. Fine. He's going to have those games, but other guys step up. That's, if you flipped around Olynyk and Zeller's numbers, you'd be like, okay, that's normal. But another guy stepped up. Another guy came in, and against the bigger teams like a Cleveland, like a New York, maybe that's where Zeller's effectiveness comes in, and he doesn't play much against the smaller teams, you know, the run and gun teams. So whatever, it works. It works. And again, the Celtics have won 8 of 9. Their only loss, that one game in Orlando that I was at. My fault. My bad, guys. I traveled down to Orlando to go
you
see this game.
You blew it.
And it's funny. I was, after Turner got
ejected. I mean, Fournier and Hezonja, my goodness.
That, yeah. And well, look, those guys for Orlando, just for a second. I mean, Hezonja is one of, They really highly regard him, so he's going to be a guy that they're going to rely on moving forward. So that I think is from their perspective, they kind of expect him to start doing that stuff. But yeah, that was crazy. So,
before we move on, I just want to throw a stat out there. We were talking about the bench. So since David Lee went down 14 games ago, since he was benched entirely. When Isaiah Thomas is off the court, the Celtics have a 105.5 offensive rating, which is basically the equivalent of the Toronto Raptors, who are in sixth place in the league for the season. And that's basically the bench. When Isaiah Thomas is not in the game, but before this run, the Celtics, when Isaiah wasn't on the court, they just fell apart, their offense. So they have figured out a way with Kelly Olynyk, with Jonas Jerebko, with that spacing, and with Turner and Smart getting to the hoop and contributing. They found a way, finally, to score without Isaiah Thomas in the lineup. And that's huge. That was the biggest issue with this team for the first 30-some-odd games. And now they finally figured it out. And that is major, because their defense – is really, really good. And if they can continue to score points, they are going to win a lot of games the rest of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, they really are. They're going on this run, and they're just doing the things they're supposed to do to win games. This tweet from @MoneyGravel, doesn't Evan Turner have some good skills for a bench guy? Hmm? That little hmm is, I think, directed at me. Huh? Hey, about that? Yeah, man. Look, I can't deny it, man. I'm gonna give the guy credit, man. He's been really good. I joke around a lot about Evan Turner. He's been really, really good.
I don't think you joke about him, though. These aren't jokes, John. Dead serious when you were talking about Evan Turner, when you were ranting about him earlier this year.
I was. I was legitimately mad there. I make jokes about Evan Turner, but I can't deny that he's been really good. He's been really, really good for the Celtics, really important for the Celtics, and they could not have made this run without him playing the way he has. So, there. Are you guys happy? Moving on. Jay Crowder, is he okay? Should he take some time off? He's been the ankle. He had, what else? What do you have, like a hip? What was the other thing that he's
doing? The calf shin thing. The shin thing,
yes.
Never really was clarified. I would actually be really surprised if he plays Sunday against the Kings based on hearing him after the Cavaliers game. He said he had nothing to give. He was kind of laughing about the injury, like, man, I really shouldn't have been out there, but pride got in the way. He wanted to play against LeBron James. He wanted to play against the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm sure he remembers the J.R. Smith elbow. He remembers getting swept out of the playoffs. He knows how much the Celtics need him to guard LeBron, and he wanted to be there. But he knew he didn't have much to give. During the middle of the game, he actually asked Isaiah Thomas whether he should sit out the rest of the way, which just goes to show just how hurting he was. So I think he sits out against the Kings. Obviously, it's not nearly as marquee an opponent as the Cavaliers. Sit out against the Kings, get yourself healthy, let your teammates pull out a win against a team that's in serious turmoil, and then come back. You know, this isn't a time to play through injuries. Get yourself healthy, come back, and that's it. They don't need him as badly as they needed him against James, against, you know, Rudy Gay and company.
Yeah, they've got the Kings, Bucks, Clippers the next few games. So if he's, it'd be nice, probably get him to sit Sunday, take Monday off, see how he feels on Tuesday. You know, they probably could go without him against the Bucks, and then maybe see if he can go Wednesday against the Clippers. That sounds about right. Okay, let's get to the point. Let's get to the thing that everybody else wants to talk about. Trade talk. We're less than 2 weeks from the trade deadline. The Celtics have been thrown into rumors with everybody. Basically, if anybody's remotely available, the Celtics are going to be thrown in there. Al Horford, Blake Griffin, who else?
Dwight Howard.
All of those.
Danilo
guys.
Gallinari.
Right.
Anybody who can play and is on a team that may want to make moves, the Celtics are rumored to be after.
Yeah. So, and people are tweeting, people are asking, like Alexander, character flaws aside, would Howard help or hold the C's back, you know, with particular emphasis on his free throw shooting? Additionally, any feelings that a big transaction is about to go down with the Celtics? And the thing is, who knows? The thing about the Celtics is Danny Ainge is always going to be on the phone with teams. So don't be surprised to hear Danny Ainge call the Kings about Cousins. Don't be surprised if he called any team about anybody. Call Portland to see if they want to trade whomever. You know, hey, is CJ McCollum available? You know, they'll ask about everybody they can because they want to see who might be available and who might not be and what the price is. So did the Celtics call Houston about Dwight Howard? All accounts are, yeah, they did. They had a conversation, and it seems that Houston wants a lot for Howard. Personally, I don't want Dwight Howard. I don't want a 30-year-old center with back and knee problems. I can't put character flaws aside. The character flaws are huge, and the only thing that allows teams to overlook the character flaws is his production, and I don't think that production is going to be anything special for much longer. So I don't want Dwight Howard. I just don't want to deal with a guy like that. Jay?
I don't know if he has character flaws. I think, you know, he's always been a player, a great player. He took a bad Orlando team to the finals. That team, they started Rafer Austin at point guard. He has been really good. The reason I think it would be a real risk to acquire him is because he's 30. He's had back and knee issues. And he's a free agent, so he'll want, or he can be a free agent. He has a player option, and he'll want huge money. By the end of that contract, it's going to look like a bad contract. So stay away from Howard. I doubt those conversations were anything substantial. Danny Ainge said recently, if they use the Nets pick, it's going to be for a young player. You know, the Celtics, they have a young team. They want a guy that fits their arc and will help them, you know, put together something sustainable that they can contend year in and year out. And Howard, I don't think, is that guy. I don't think he's good enough at this point to attract free agents. So no, I'm a big no on Howard, but I don't think it's anything to get worked up about anyway.
Yeah.
What's really interesting to me is this is a really different situation than when Ainge went out and got Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett. At that time, there was like nothing to risk back then. You know, they had a 24-win team. They had gone nowhere. they didn't have, like, they had some, I guess, talented young guys or, like, guys with potential. But now they have guys that are kind of winning. They're third in the East right now.
They had Ryan Gomes.
they did. They had Ryan, John Corrales' favorite, Ryan Gomes.
Sorry. You were saying.
Yeah, but so it's a really different situation where they actually have something now. And obviously it's not what they want it to be. It's not a championship contending team, but they're third in the East. They've won 8 of their last 9 games. This is a good team with a lot of good young players. You don't make any desperate moves. You don't, and I'm not saying obviously the KG trade wasn't a desperate move. That was a no-brainer from the top. But you don't, you're not in a position where you need to do anything desperate. You have a good young core, and so it'll be interesting to see what types of players they target, whether it'll be someone like you said, McCollum. Those are the types of guys that I think will not would be more interesting than the blockbuster guy, but maybe more realistic at the trade deadline. You know, last year they added Isaiah Thomas, who nobody thought was going to be an all-star a year later. And he's just been a huge pickup. A month earlier, they picked up Jay Crowder, who has been, you know, their second best player and one of the most improved players in the league. They have absolutely fleeced teams in basically every trade dating back to the KG trade. So Ainge will be looking for those teams that are willing to part ways with guys that are young and might look better in a different role. So I think those might be the guys that you should keep an eye on, more than guys like Dwight Howard, who are in their 30s and probably over the hill and don't really fit the rest of what the Celtics are building with their young team.
So, okay, let me just work in some of these tweets here as we continue the conversation. Bailey, what realistic trade targets would you consider making the net 16 pick available? What would your best offer be for Gallo, presuming the Nets pick is off the table? So that's one thing. I'm not willing to give up that Nets pick for anything less than a superstar. I can't justify that. I'll give up every other pick the Celtics have in 16, the Dallas pick, the Celtics' own pick, the Minnesota, which probably be 2 firsts. If it were like Gallo or Horford, those guys I would definitely pursue and make an aggressive offer. And I'm going to work this tweet in here. How do the Seas manage the multitude of picks coming their way if no one wants to trade for them? How to clear the roster? I wrote something earlier this week about the Celtics almost having too many assets and being almost forced to overpay in a scenario like this. They have right now 2 guys on rookie contracts, I believe. Marcus Smart, Kelly Olynyk, still in the rookie deals. Jared Sullinger, too, because he's going to be a restricted free agent. But this summer, he'll be off of that. Going into next season, they'll still have Olynyk and Marcus Smart still in their rookie deals. That's rotation players. They obviously still have RJ Hunter, who they want to develop. James Young, Terry Rozier, Jordan Mickey. 4 guys right there. So 6 guys on rookie deals. Then you make the Nets pick, that's 7. You make the Dallas pick, that's 8. You make your own pick, that's 9. That is not a great situation for the Celtics. You don't have 9 guys still on your rookie deals when you have still on your roster a bunch of guys that you need to play. Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, you know, those guys, it doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense. This is a team that's moving forward. So you need veterans. You need to get rid of some of these things. You need to get rid of some of these assets, these picks, maybe some of your young players. So teams know that. Atlanta knows that. So when the Celtics come calling for Al Horford and try to make one of those Danny Ainge steal deals, they're not going to buy that because they know that you've got money to spend. It's like going in to say, oh, I'm only going to pay $14,000 for that new car. I really can't pay anymore. When they know you've got $50,000 in the bank that you can spend, that's disposable income. Doesn't work in a bargaining situation. So Danny Ainge is in a little bit of a tough spot when it comes to making these trade offers. When you want to go for Danilo Gallinari, when you want to go for Al Horford, they know you've got assets that you can't really use. Danny Ainge can't make all of those draft picks and keep them for next season. So whether it's the trade deadline or the summer, Danny Ainge is going to make these picks. If he makes them in June, they got to go. At some point in July, they got to go. You got to clear out this roster somehow. So,
I think you're looking at this the wrong way. I think having that many picks, those picks always have value. Whether you're going to package them to trade up or trade them for future picks, picks always have value. There's always something you can do with a draft pick. You don't have to necessarily keep a guy. You could draft and stash a Europe guy. From what I've read, there's a lot of talented international players in this draft. So that could be good for draft and stash. So I don't think there's any push for Danny Ainge to move those picks right away. I don't think that's any leverage for another team has. In a lot of ways, Ainge has the leverage because if you look around the league, among teams that are going to be buyers, I'm assuming the Philadelphia 76ers probably aren't at this point. Among teams that are going to be buyers, the Celtics are basically by themselves with assets. And so if a top player comes available, they are going to have at least a very competitive package. So I look at it a different way with all the draft picks and stuff. I don't think that gives other teams leverage at all, because draft picks always have value. And Ainge there's no rush for him to move those, even if, you know, he's not ultimately going to use all of them this year.
Well, they do have value. I just feel like when another team knows you have money to spend, they're going to make you spend that money. That's the thing. You can't, if you're a player and a team has cap space and they try to lowball you with an offer, you just look at them and you say, no, you've got $40 million in cap space. You can't lowball me. You can't tell me you don't have money to spend. It's the same thing when you're dealing with a GM. When a GM knows you've got those assets and he knows that you really can't keep them all, that it, of course, Danny Ainge has leverage in being able to offer all of these things, but it's, like I said in my piece, the biggest strength is also the biggest weakness. He has the ability to offer a lot, but he almost has to offer a lot. And but he can also afford to. So if you sit there and you overpay, let's say, for a Gallinari, you can. They can. And it's not horrible. So in one way, it's slightly negative because he has to spend it. There is a little bit of an expiration date on these things. But he doesn't have to, like you were saying, he doesn't have to go out and trade them all. There is, like you said, the ability to draft and stash a guy. So there are ways around it. And certainly, if anybody's smart enough to know their way around this situation, it's Danny Ainge in the Celtics front office. So I'm not sitting there saying they're screwed, but they do have a little bit of an issue by having all of this and everyone knowing that you have all of this stuff, because it takes away a little bit of your negotiating power. That's all I'm saying. So let's start getting to more of these tweets. Josh says, with this win, you obviously can't break up the team at the deadline, including Lee, right? You say, obviously kidding, talking about trade rooms.
David Lee, untouchable at the trade deadline.
Untouchable. Because the Celtics last night tweeted, who delivered the most important message of the night? David Lee, says Brad Stevens. Lee told the C's early, trailing 14-2. The Cavs were a team of runs. Stay focused. So really, David Lee was the MVP of last night's game.
That win goes to David Lee.
Yeah, he gets the game ball. And at Stanford something says, or at RLS003 says, is this the most important contribution that Lee's given to the Celtics? Absolutely. That was by far, I mean, really, when you think about it, the Celtics don't win that game without David Lee telling them, hey, we're down 14-2. Stay focused.
Phenomenal veteran presence there from David Lee.
Do you see us getting a star soon? Would you be okay bringing back Rondo? No, not at this point. I think let's just move on. I think if the Sacramento Kings can just work out their crap, and I was thinking they should have gotten rid of George Karl. They should never should have fired Malone in the first place. I don't know what the hell they're doing. Once Karl goes, they can get things a little more settled over there. But that team's a grease fire.
I don't know if they'll ever get things settled over there. They're the Kings, man.
Yeah.
The Kings are out of control all the time.
They are, from the top down, just a mess. Just a mess. I don't know. Does Vlade Divac know what he's doing running that team?
Did you see Bobby Jackson? So Bobby Jackson is like their scout over there. He's their commentator from the studio. And he absolutely lit into George Karl after the game, saying he could just hop off the set and coach better. Oh man, it was that was unreal. Yeah, like just lit him up. It was great TV, but probably not the best sign for Karl's future when you've got the color commentator or the in studio analyst saying he could do a better job coaching than you do.
they're bad. They're bad. And they've got some talent. They have more ability than they're showing. So that'll be interesting to see. The Celtics are catching them at the right time. Gino Sorcinelli. Sorry, I'm just going to say Gino. How far can this team realistically go in the playoffs? And is it wise to make a major trade? Well, we just talked about the trade stuff. You make the trade. Danny Ainge is not going to make a trade that hurts the team. It's wise to bring in a guy that will help, and I keep saying Horford and Gallo because those are the two guys that I think would fit and do well, and I'd be okay with signing Horford long term because he's got the type of game that I think matures well. So I think it would be wise to make a move like that, and I still think the Celtics team they're going to win. I think they win a first round series, and then I've been saying from the beginning they probably lose in the second round. I think the way the playoffs are, it's much different than the regular season, and I still think they'll have trouble getting past the second round.
Yeah, I mean, second round is probably where they'll end up. Again, their ceiling, I would say, is Eastern Conference Finals. They're not going to beat the Cavaliers in a series unless they can score 5 points in 4 seconds every game. Eastern Conference Finals is their ceiling right now, but who knows what will happen in the next couple of weeks. And, I mean, I still doubt that they will make any move that will push them past Cleveland this year. But they could go out and make a move that kind of solidifies themselves maybe into that 2 spot even, although the Raptors have been pretty good this year.
Okay. If the Seas finish as a 6 or 7 seed in the East, would you consider that an underachievement or a disappointing season? That's from at JBales96. Everything is so tight. The Celtics could finish from 3rd to 8th at this point. And it as long as they continue playing this way, wherever they fall, I guess. The only thing that would be disappointing to me in the regular season is if they got away from playing like this. If they continue to play this defense and they continue to play hard and play like they have been, obviously winning 8 of 9 is not sustainable. But as long as they keep playing the right way and they do the things that they've been doing, I'm okay with how this season plays out. And again, it's so tight in the East. If they finish the 6th seed, that's cool. That other teams will win games and there'll be some leapfrogging. The Celtics were they lost that game in Orlando. They dropped to 6th. They won their next game. They got into a tie for the 3rd seed. So I don't.
Yeah, right now, really three through six are all at 22 losses. So, I mean, I'm not ready to say it's a disappointment if they fall to 6 or 7. I'm not ready to say it's a huge success either. But let's see what happens with all the other teams too. That question is probably a little premature. Sorry, whoever asked it.
Now we're getting into some fun as we get close to wrapping up this show. Adam Kaufman asks, is Celtics at 7 your favorite Saturday morning Celtics show aired in Boston at 7 a.m.?
I tweeted him back today. It's in my top 5.
Yeah. It's solidly in the top 5.
Yeah. I don't know where it falls in the top 5, but it's top 5.
The Everly brothers at the Everly bro. Which one of you is always eating or something during the podcast? There's a weird noise like a fork in a dish. He's a loyal listener. I think there might be something with your mic.
That might be me drinking coffee or something. It might be me typing on my computer to try to get stats and stuff like that. It could be any number of things. I'm not really sure. It's probably me. I'm gonna guess.
You got something that bangs, like your headphones are banging against the microphone or something. I don't know.
I'm slamming my headphones against the wall while I do the podcast every day.
Okay. So it's rant time for me.
Uh oh. We have a rant, John? How are we gonna have a rant?
I got two rants. Okay.
How, John?
Two. No, here's the thing. This Benjamin Davis guy on Twitter, I've had enough of this guy's crap. Benjamin Davis,
will you get your life together?
Benjamin Davis, get your goddamn life together. I'm sick of you going onto Twitter and begging for people to say things on podcasts. What the hell is wrong with you, man?
What happened? Hold on. Who is Benjamin Davis? You got to back up and explain who Benjamin Davis is.
All right, that was Benjamin Davis tweeted us. Says, could you go on an angry rant about me? I could really use a good week next week. So that was a favor. That was an excellent tweet.
Thinking, like, who the hell is this guy?
And I didn't tell you.
John's really got a lot of hostility for this.
Your reaction was great.
Benjamin is going to have one heck of a week now. Yeah,
that was.
He really is.
That was for Benjamin. That's the end of our Twitter stuff. I hope you have a great week. Benjamin, if you hit the lottery this week, you got to split the money because I gave you my little podcast.
That's the John Corrales magic.
Do you have anything else from the Celtics before I wrap things up?
One more thing that I think is a cool story and a heartbreaking story. It's Avery Bradley is now wearing a bracelet for in honor of a 15-year-old kid who passed away in a car accident. And after that happened, Bradley heard about the story and got in touch with the family, sent a letter, sent a signed jersey, and then actually sent them two tickets to the Celtics Magic game in Orlando. Met up with them for 15 minutes after the game and really, really was touched by this family. And they gave him a bracelet in honor of their kid, Jarrett Harshman. And Bradley has been wearing it the past three games. So I think that's just a really touching story. And just the fact that he's wearing it every game in honor of this kid he never met for a family. He was just really touched by this kid's story. The poor kid, he passed away in a car accident on the way to church. And he was a huge Avery Bradley fan. And so Bradley actually saw a picture of the kid wearing his jersey and said he just got chills and has now developed this bond with the family and met the family and now wears the bracelet. And so I just thought that deserved mention. Just a really obviously heartbreaking, but also pretty uplifting that somebody like Avery Bradley would go out of his way to develop that bond with the family and now wears the bracelet because the story has touched them so much.
That is really nice. Look, Avery Bradley's a good guy and it's really nice of him to do something like that. So good for Avery Bradley. Okay. My parting thought is a thing that happened last night and I lost followers on Twitter over this and I really don't care.
Is this a real rant?
This is legitimate. This is a legitimate rant.
Okay.
This is a legitimate thing that I really want to address because I think it's a little bit of a problem on especially on Twitter that a lot of people follow me, a lot of people follow Jay, and a lot of them are women. A lot of women like basketball. A lot of women are on Twitter tweeting like the rest of us about basketball, and they want to watch the game and enjoy it and be part of this big Celtics family. And some of them are new to the game. Some of them are really well-versed in the game, just like any guy out there. And the problem is when I say something like, wow, Tyler Zeller's been big in this game. I don't get crude remarks sent back to me, but women do, and I see it on Twitter, and I think that that's crap, and I think that it needs to stop. So I'm telling you guys, I'm asking you guys to please be better, because you might think it's innocent fun, but a lot of these women who are trying to watch the game get that from multiple guys every freaking day. And I want you to understand that that is a problem, that we can't treat people like that. So I saw the problem last night, I addressed it, and I got pushback, and I got unfollowed, and because that's how people are perceiving it, that it's innocent fun, and I'm telling you guys that it's not. So my plea to the men out there on Twitter, don't do that stuff. Treat women with respect. They're here to watch the game with all of us and participate. And if one of them doesn't know something, or one of them, it doesn't matter. Help her out like you would help. If I didn't know some aspect of the game, you'd help me out with it. So just, I'm asking people to treat everyone with respect, and let's all just be one big happy Celtics family. Treat them like your sister, not some drunk girl at the bar that, you know, at a frat party or something like that. Okay? That's the end of my rant.
Or else John will come after you, and he is big and scary, and his television news station just used him as a bouncer in a promotion, and he looks like a real badass. So stay away from the women, or else John will have something to say.
I did. I will. And I will.
Yeah. John will hunt you down, and he will tear you limb from limb, and he will make sure you never watch another Celtics game.
I got so much crap for that picture. And if people go to my Instagram, you'll see it. Yes, I did. I put it on my Instagram, at JK Reds Army, which let's finish on a good note. Did you see Evan Turner mic'd up? He was so funny.
Yes, yes.
I will say he was so funny mic'd up. He's shouting out Jonas Jerebko's Instagram. It's funny. Regardless of all the other stuff that we've said about Evan Turner, Jay, you've said it from the beginning. Evan Turner is funny. He's a good interview. And if he does go away, I know that everybody in the locker room will be upset that you don't get the quote machine going.
The media will really miss Evan Turner if he is dealt away at the trade deadline.
That was funny.
We will really miss all those gems.
Yes. And I did. So my Instagram, I'm shouting out my Instagram, is at JK Reds Army. And yes, that was, I got a lot of stuff like that I'm going to be one of the terrorists killed by Liam Neeson in the next Taken movie. I got a lot of jokes like that. So I do look very much like a Taken villain. So I think that's a good place to end. That's a good place to end.
Yeah. So, stay away from John, or he will go all Taken on your ass.
That's it. We're going away now. Thank you for listening, everybody. Really appreciate it. Go to iTunes. Give us a rating. 5-star rating would be fantastic, because then we will get into the up-and-coming podcast thing, and more people will listen to us. And maybe, you know, we'll make some drinking money or something. But go to iTunes and rate us. Follow us on Twitter if you don't already. You probably just, whatever. We'll see you next week on the Ray and Jay's podcast. Shine and stop for you to see. What your life can truly be. Shine and star for you to see. What your life can truly be. Shine and star for you to see. What your life can truly be. Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.